Hello and welcome to another episode of Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. This year, The Conduit has partnered with the Johnson & Johnson Center for Health Worker Innovation to create a podcast series that explores the meaning of care in different communities around the world. From physicians to directors, community workers to advocates, we will be talking to individuals on the ground to discover answers to the question, what is the point of care? Today's episode will focus on the role of community health workers across sub-Saharan Africa who are responsible for delivering care to approximately 40% of the continent's population. That's 916,000 active community health workers treating over 400 million people across 24 different countries. Though they are not often formally recognized as professionals, community health workers may be responsible for at least a dozen different types of preventative, promotional, and curative services, depending on the country and local context. My guests today are Prosi Muyingo and Dr. Madeline Ballard. Prosi is a community health worker in Matanya District, central Uganda. Since 2019, Prosi has been providing reproductive, maternal, and child health services to 120 households. From the onset of the pandemic, she has been playing a key role of providing reliable information about COVID-19 to her community. When Prosi is not busy providing health services, she's a hairdresser, offering these services from her home to supplement her family income. Madeline is the co-founder and executive director of the Community Health Impact Coalition, a global alliance of community health implementers working to ensure that community health workers receive fair pay, field support, and the official recognition they deserve so everyone can access high-quality healthcare. Madeline has spent her career advocating for the implementation of impactful community health systems around the world and has worked alongside community health workers who are raising awareness on the critical role they play in the broader healthcare ecosystem. Welcome, Prosi and Madeline. Thank you so much for joining me. I'd like to start off first by asking you, Prosi, some questions about your experience as a community health worker. Can you tell me more about your journey to becoming a community health worker and what the role means to you?
Thank you so much. My journey being a community health worker started by seeing my fellow community health worker visiting my house. After, the lady was really sounding knowledgeable, answering my questions because I was having many questions about health in the community. After that, I told her that I would like to join you. She took me directly to the branch. After there, the branch told me that you should first see your chairman or chairperson, LOC1. I went directly to him. After that, he called the meeting and he said that we are having, in the village, I'm called Mami Imuran. And I said that I want to help my community in healthy department at the LOC1 level. After that, I was taken that in a non-government organization, it's Living Good. It took me directly to the basic training. That took more than 3 months. I came as a complete community health worker, whereby I was able to treat and test children under 5 for malaria, pneumonia, and diarrhea. That was 2019. After 2019, you know, it was only 1 year we entered in the pandemic. That was 2020. That pandemic, again, the same organization took us to the training, how we'll sensitize the community about the pandemic and how we can help them overcome the stigma of the pandemic. I joined my fellow community health workers worldwide to advocate for the PPE. That was 2020 in September. We advocated for our rights and the benefits we need. I'm also a peer leader, whereby I oversee my fellow Teni community health workers. I share, I mentor them, and I guide them with my experience. I act as a link to our supervisors, so I give them the feedback from my 10 to my fellow community health workers. Being a community health worker, I'm willing to sacrifice my time to my neighbors to take responsibility, even in hard circumstances. Like in a pandemic, I have to increase the time I used to use in the field so that I reach to every home and sensitize about it, about the pandemic. So my work in the community, it's a call from God. Sometimes it's a blessing. And I'm willing to work as a community health worker until God said that you have done your work.
Thank you, Prasi, for telling us about how you got your start as a community health worker and just before the pandemic. What a time to start this career. And already right off the bat, having to fight for yourself to get the PPE and resources you needed. Madeline, I'd like to ask you about this part specifically. As executive director of the Community Health Impact Coalition, you're at ground zero alongside Prasi. And I'd love to talk to you more about the similarities and differences you have seen and how community health workers are embedded into larger healthcare systems. So why do you think community health workers are often not adequately compensated for their work, especially considering the complex care that they're expected to provide?
It's a great and perplexing question. This past year, actually, a Lancet inquiry framed whether to pay community health workers as a, quote, key financing policy choice. And we wrote back saying, hey, you know, we wonder, is the same true of doctors, of nurses? What about the various consultancies, academies, foundations that wrote that piece and also employ much of the global development sector? Do those types of institutions face similar policy choices? I think it boils down to respect and recognition. CHWs are typically low literacy, rural, women of color. And if you want a list of folks who are routinely sort of ignored, belittled in society, I think those intersections are certainly on it. And I'd say that the blame for that is shared by many. A country's legal frameworks are not the only problem. For decades, donor-funded programs, including big ones like USAID or DFID in the UK, have signaled that delivering healthcare via unpaid labor is an acceptable option. And frankly, to that, I think we would say that fighting one injustice, right, the lack of access to healthcare, by perpetuating another, labor exploitation of community health workers, is not justice. And hard-to-reach communities shouldn't have to wonder if, how, from whom they'll get access to healthcare, and CHW shouldn't have to carry the health system on their back in the way that Prasi was describing. And so demanding that individuals either volunteer or work, insane hours to access care for themselves, their families, that's just coercion, plain and simple.
So as a community health worker, you're really ingrained in the community, and you can intervene at the very start of an issue. I guess it's what's so unique to your profession. You deliver care on the doorsteps. So can you tell me about what a typical work day might look for you and what's expected of you as a community health worker?
In my home, I woke up at exactly 6 p.m. I pray, I do my housework, I prepare my children to school, and I help my husband to get ready for the work. After that, I check my task tab. That is, I use my smart health app. I check the work, what I'm going to do on that very day. After seeing that work, I pack my bag. After packing my bag, then I go to the field and leave my home. I meet and greet my clients. I look and ask for those with health problems. I counsel about personal hygiene where necessary. I can enter the house and I say that, and I see they don't have a toilet, and I talk about it. So if the family, their hygiene is not okay, even I talk about it. When I find a sick child under 5 years, I test and treat. When the child is above, I can help them to go in the facility and see the doctor who can help on that. If I see a pregnant mother who is not yet attend any service, I help or I escort that mother to go to the hospital. When we reach the hospital, I make sure that the first dose is given when I'm around. If there is no medicine, after the doctor wrote, I took the book with the patient direct to the pharmacy and we buy the medicine. Mothers in the community, they expect me to solve away all their family problems. Other, they see me as their village doctor, savior, who will handle all their health problems. Others, their marriage counselors, whereby they have to tell me each and everything happened or going on in the family. Each mother or father or a teenager, they tell me the thing they pass through. I can say that the compensation I receive, it's not enough for the work I do because I work day and night. How can I say that I work day and night? I leave my phone there. Those with the things they don't understand, even they call at night, they consult from me. After consulting from me, some of those who need help, I escort them. I can't sleep when my community, they are not sleeping. I can't even eat when they are not eating. I help them in all problems they are facing. All my clients, the good thing, they own my number. Whenever they need, they call me. Thank you.
I mean, Prossy, the commitment that you have to your community is truly remarkable. I want to underscore what you just said and say it again. I can't sleep when my community isn't sleeping. I can't eat when my community isn't eating. And then we have the flip side of that, which is that community health workers are consistently undercompensated and don't receive the resources that are responsive to the level of care that you're providing. So, Madeline, from your perspective, generally, how are community health workers perceived by and embedded in the communities in which they serve? And what changes do you feel needs to be made to ensure that they're given the formal and professional recognition they deserve?
Yeah, I think, I mean, as you heard Prossy describing, CHWs have deep relationships of trust with the communities they serve. And Prossy's a special caregiver and activist, but I think those relationships of trust are common to all community health workers. That's been demonstrated kind of over and over again in research and as part of, I think, CHW's secret sauce. But in context of high unemployment and poorly resourced health systems, again, I think you see the risk for exploitation is quite high. Community health workers take on these jobs in the hope that maybe they'll actually, or sorry, I should say they take on these tasks in the hope that they'll one day become jobs. And engage in these volunteer activities. But time use studies indicate that CHWs, you know, they're not spending 5 or 10 hours a week volunteering in their community. They're working 30, 40 hours per week. Whenever you need me, call me. You know, I'm there. And that's the only resource for and recourse for a lot of folks. And so if we look across the landscape of protection and recognition for community health workers, we see a lot of different things, you know, performance-based incentives in Rwanda, we see volunteer models in Ghana, different sort of private contracts in Nigeria, and in almost all of them, CHWs are either underpaid or they're unpaid, and that seems sort of direct contradiction to international labor law and frankly just what decency would warrant. And so I think from Community Health Impact Coalition's own research, we know that specific approaches to that contract, to community health worker compensation, some are better than others. Some are better at incorporating the necessary protections. Particularly, we'd highlight just public sector models with models with public sector wage floors, like the ones we'd see in Brazil. And so the degree to which we can start moving community health workers onto the wage bill and just treating them like any other health worker, that's what we'd like to see. And I think that's what I should also say is already happened. You know, in Malawi, CHWs are civil servants. In Liberia, they made that choice after Ebola. So this is not some sort of far-flung dream. We think it's a rising tide, and countries just need to kind of join the party.
So I'm hearing that there are lots of gaps in policies related to community health workers' respect and recognition across health systems. So what are some of the policies that you think are needed for community health workers in Uganda? And Prasi, let's hear from you first.
Thank you. The policy that prevent and protect from sexual harassment. Sometimes as a leader, I talk to my fellow community health workers, and I know, I share with them, I know what they pass through. I think that police will be helpful. Another police, Salary and Wages Act, whereby there will be specific amount of money given to us. We get incentives monthly, but that incentives, if you are sick, if you have any problems, it means you won't get incentive because you didn't work, or you didn't hit the target that month. The policy of sustainability policy, like in the terms of getting PPEs, when there is an outbreak, our funders can support and send to us in the outbreak. But if there is a policy that can reinforce the sustainability, they will be able to continue receiving PPEs. Hence, they can continue keeping our bodies, families, and continue serving our communities. We lack one voice as a community, that is advocacy. Many community health workers, we don't know our role. But when they happen to know that advocacy will help, they will join. Another challenge which has not helped, the challenge that exists is that bureaucracy, whereby the Ministry of Health leaders came together and said that the community health workers will be paid something or will be paid for our working. As in the government can say that they are going to be giving something monthly, but they implement the policy, but due to lack of enough funders, they end up failing. Another thing I can say, those are political leaders. They are greedy. They can send the money, like for example, during the pandemic, they said that the community health workers are going to be paid monthly, but up to now, I have another challenge on my desk. My fellow community health worker from another district, they have told me that they were assigned to work during this Ebola pandemic, but up to now, they didn't get anything.
And Madeline, what policy changes do you feel are needed? How can governments, multilaterals, global leaders, and other stakeholders best support community health workers? And what are your hopes for the future of community health?
Pay and accredit community health workers. We want to create a world full of professional community health workers. We say the four S's, you know, who are salaried, skilled, supervised, supplied. And our vision is basically quality of care for all, including those who provide it. And we're just looking forward to the day when CHWs are no longer the biggest, we call them the biggest philanthropists, given the amount of unpaid time that they contribute to caring for the world. And, you know, it's enough. I think CHWs are the anonymous donors, their nameless benefactors to everyone else. And we really look forward to that, the day when that's hopefully coming soon, when that's no longer the case.
Thank you so much, Prasi and Madeline, for joining me. It's been both insightful and a real honor and privilege to talk to you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations in partnership with the Johnson & Johnson Center for Health Worker Innovation. Please do subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information about The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.